We thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client. Next case for argument is Gentle versus Barnhart. Mr. Schultz.
Good morning, Your Honors. Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Nicole Gentle. Plaintiff alleges that the administrative law judge made several errors in this matter requiring reversal and remand to the commissioner. The ALJ failed to consider many of the symptoms that Ms. Gentle suffers from due to her major depressive disorder. The only limitation found by the ALJ was that Ms. Gentle could not perform detailed and complex work. However, that finding did not take into consideration the claimant's symptoms of loss of energy and feeling overwhelmed by even taking care of her children, by her having panic attacks and not feeling like that she can leave the house. She was often irritable and short-tempered. None of those factors were found by the ALJ or taken into consideration in his residual functional capacity assessment. Yet all of those symptoms are found to exist by the plaintiff's treating psychiatrist, and they all are consistent with the ongoing treatment records found in this record. In this court's case of Indoranto versus Barnhart, it held that where the ALJ found the claimant suffered from migraine headaches and blurred vision, that the ALJ was then required to make a finding as to what the specific symptoms were that the plaintiff suffered from due to those impairments. Similarly, in Ms. Gentle's case, the ALJ found that she suffered from a severe depressive disorder, yet ignored the varying symptoms that the treating psychiatrist found to exist. In this case, the treating psychiatrist also indicated or provided an opinion that Ms. Gentle was disabled due to her major depression. Now, the ALJ discounted that opinion, and yet there's no contrary medical opinion of record other than the opinions of the state agency psychologists. But there's two problems with their opinions. One, the ALJ rejected their opinions. And those doctors found that Ms. Gentle suffered from no medically determinable psychiatric impairment. But the ALJ, in fact, found that she suffers from major depression. And probably more importantly is that those doctors were completely unaware that Ms. Gentle had begun receiving any treatment for depression because they issued their opinions prior to the time that her psychiatric treatment began. So they hadn't reviewed any of the psychiatric treatment notes. If the ALJ felt, as he stated in his opinion, that Dr. Burton's opinion was not supported by the objective evidence, he should have recontacted the doctor for clarification. I mean, we have ongoing psychiatric treatment notes with the doctor having the opportunity to observe Ms. Gentle and observe her behavior, and based on that, he came up with a diagnosis, noted the symptoms that she suffered from. In particular, Ms. Gentle's testimony and the evidence that she at times would not leave her house and that she suffered from some anxiety attacks is crucial because the vocational expert in this case testified that if Ms. Gentle were to miss work even one day a month, she would be unemployable, unable to sustain employment. Ms. Gentle testified to having these anxiety attacks twice a week and at other times feeling like she could not leave the house due to her depression, but the administrative law judge failed to discuss that aspect of her testimony and failed to discuss that aspect of the vocational expert's testimony. In addition, the ALJ failed to properly consider Ms. Gentle's obesity.
What is the significance of obesity? Presumably, you know, obesity can have various health effects and so on, but they're taken into account, aren't they, right? If it makes her back worse, well, then that would show up in the medical reports. So what does obesity add once you've considered all the ailments that obesity aggravates?
Well, if obesity can cause greater limitations than would be expected to be found,
I know, but if you're examined and those limitations are determined by a doctor, why does it matter whether they're caused by obesity or caused by something else?
Well, it may not. The problem in this case is that the state agency doctors don't recognize the diagnosis of obesity in Ms. Jensen.
No, forget obesity. Look, what are the effects of obesity on her ability to work? What does obesity do to one's ability to work?
Well, it can have varying impacts on her ability to work.
Just give me one example.
Well, limitations in standing for prolonged periods of time. She testified that she was limited to standing for 10 or 15 minutes at a time. Now, due to the objective evidence...
Well, is that something the doctors would opine upon, her ability to stand?
Well, in this case, there is not a residual functional assessment from a treating doctor.
From any doctor?
Well, the state agency doctors who did not examine her, but they didn't recognize the diagnosis of obesity. And the ALJ, according to the Social Security ruling 02-1P, is required to consider obesity, but
Sir,
it doesn't appear that he did.
Your argument is that the immigration, that the administrative law judge misassessed her ability to stand because he didn't consider her obesity?
That's correct. That's the essence of the argument.
Is there any other way in which the disability might affect her ability to work?
Well, her ability to sit. I mean, the ruling indicates that sitting and standing can both be negatively affected by obesity, especially in combination with musculoskeletal disease. And Ms. Gentle testified that after sitting for 20 minutes, she became very stiff and had to get up. And there was evidence of pain in her hips.
So in other words, you're saying the ALJ didn't consider whether her obesity would make that claim of hers plausible?
That's correct. And finally, plaintiff alleges that the ALJ's credibility determination is not supported. The ALJ mentions three factors, but one of them is what he calls the plaintiff's ordinary daily activities. And at one place in his opinion, he states that she engaged in an extensive range of daily activities, and that finding is not supported in this record, and I would argue it's patently wrong on this record. Ms. Gentle did some cooking in a microwave only. She testified that she did some laundry, but at one point she indicated it took her 3 days to do 3 loads of laundry because she had to constantly rest in between. She would go to doctor's appointments occasionally and talk on the phone to friends. That was basically the extent of her daily activities, and this court has held on numerous occasions that the ability to perform some basic household activities does not support a finding that a person can engage in full-time, substantial gainful activity, especially where the testimony has shown that the person needs to rest in between. And in this case, where Ms. Gentle also experiences the symptoms of depression, not wanting to leave her house, the fact that she might be able to microwave some food or do a load of laundry wouldn't impact on her credibility concerning the fact that at times she won't leave her house or can't leave her house or is irritable and doesn't get along with people or is yelling and screaming, things like that.
What is the normal weight range for a woman 5'11"? Do you know?
I don't know what the normal weight range is. I apologize. I didn't look that up. In this case, Ms. Gentle was something called the body mass index, and there's 3 levels of obesity according to that. And Ms. Gentle was at the upper end of the second range of obesity. Another thing, just getting back to that, in the ALJ's decision, he doesn't even mention Ms. Gentle's weight. You know, he doesn't indicate that he was even aware of how much she weighed and how much extra weight she was carrying. But probably the most important error in the ALJ's credibility determination is his finding that Ms. Gentle was able to care for her children, because that finding is completely contradicted by the treating psychiatrist's report, in which he states that Ms. Gentle is overwhelmed with the task of trying to take care of her children. And in fact, he wrote a letter on her behalf requesting that she be provided daycare or child care from a social service agency because she could not take care of her own children. And that testimony, opinion is supported in the record by Ms. Gentle's consistent complaints. So the ALJ's relying on her being able to care for her children to find her not credible when the record shows she really was not capable of properly caring for her children is not supported in the record.
And there was no contrary testimony submitted on that point, was there?
No, there was not.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Ms. Werfel?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kristen Werfel on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. Substantial evidence supports, and the ALJ found, that Ms. Gentle is significantly limited in a number of ways due to her impairments. But the record as a whole contained little medical evidence and other evidence to support her claims of disability. Ms. Gentle filed in September 2001 when she was almost 25 years old, and the final medical evidence concerning her physical condition comes only 7 months later in April 2002 in a letter from her treating physician, Dr. McShane, explaining that her back condition prevented her from lifting heavy objects. The evidence concerning her mental health treatment shows that in May 2002, she began participating in counseling and medication management for her diagnosis of major depressive disorder, that she began to show partial response to medication in her first months of treatment, and that by January 2003, her psychiatrist assessed her depressive symptoms had improved. Besides her hospitalization in February 2002 due to the birth of her baby, Ms. Gentle was never hospitalized for any of her impairments. I'd like to turn first, with regard to her physical impairments, to Ms. Gentle's argument with respect to her obesity. We've argued in our brief that this case is very similar to this court's recent decision in Scarbuck versus Barnhart. I won't go over that in detail here. It is in our brief, but I would just point out that in this case, the ALJ does note in his decision that in a May 2002 report from her counselor, he notes her being obese. The ALJ's decision also reflects his review of Dr. McShane's April 2002 letter, in which she opines that Ms. Gentle should not lift heavy objects due to her back condition. The ALJ also reviewed the state agency physician's opinions that come in December 2001 and March of 2002. In that assessment, the state agency physicians record her weight as being 280 pounds. So the ALJ considered the treating physician's opinion, the treating physician who knew of Ms. Gentle's weight in combination with her back impairment, and the ALJ also reviewed the state agency physician's opinion, and they opined that she was capable of doing medium work. And in the end, the ALJ actually assessed a more restrictive residual functional capacity. So, as argued in our brief...
But what about Mr. Schultz's point that the ALJ didn't consider whether her obesity would make it difficult for her to stand and sit for protracted periods?
In the ALJ's decision, at the very beginning of his credibility determination, he does note her allegations that she's unable to sustain work due to her pain. He does not explicitly review that testimony of Ms. Gentle with respect to her sitting and standing capabilities. But there is no evidence in the record to support her contention that somehow her sitting or standing is more limited. There were medical opinions with regard to the duration of her pregnancy between the beginning
Wouldn't
of
Wouldn't it make sense that obesity would make it more obesity at that level would make it more difficult to sit and stand?
In certain situations, yes, Your Honor. Here, Dr. McShane, who treated her for her back condition and knew of her obesity, of her weight, opined that she had no sitting or standing limitations. And
well,
that...
Finish that.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. That treating physician included no sitting or standing limitations, and the only sitting or standing limitations that we have in the record from a medical source come from the duration of her pregnancy, when they couldn't assess the full impact of her back condition. They couldn't give her appropriate testing because of her pregnancy. They had to wait until after.
Well, counsel said there was a limitation of 15 minutes on standing before she experienced pain and 20 minutes for sitting. Was that just during the period of the pregnancy?
That was her testimony.
That was her testimony.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
That was her testimony, and that was her testimony as of that day, not referring to her pregnancy.
So then there was testimony in the record as to the length of time.
She did give that testimony, yes, Your Honor.
And there was no comment by the ALJ with respect to that?
No explicit comment, Your Honor. In the credibility determination, as I had stated before, he did note that she said that she couldn't sustain work due to her pain, and then gives various and several reasons, including the objective medical findings, the lack of more aggressive treatment for either her physical impairment or her mental impairment, as well as her activities.
But what about the finding with respect to the care for the children and the fact that there had been a recommendation that she get a caregiver and that she had difficulty caring for the children as well as the daily activities, which I think are problematic?
Yes, Your Honor. The ALJ in the decision states that her activities of taking care of her children, cooking, and I believe cleaning, he uses these activities as examples of what she does during the day. And in Ms. Gentle's brief and in argument, there has been a remark that these are intermittent daily activities. And I would disagree that these are the kind of intermittent daily activities that this court has addressed in other cases. With regard to caring for her children, she was a single mother and was caring for two children, both under the age of five. This was a 24-hour job, and she did say that she received help, but her testimony was that...
What is she supposed to do with the children? Abandon them or what? I don't understand. She doesn't have a husband, does she?
No, Your Honor, it's only her.
So what's she supposed to do?
No, right, Your Honor.
We've had cases, we've discussed the fact, it sounds like a contradiction. People in desperate circumstances will work beyond their capacity, right? Mm-hmm. So unless she abandons the children to foster care, she has to take care of them, however difficult it is and however inadequate her care is.
I'd like to first read a portion of her testimony regarding the care of her children. When asked if she cared for her 11-month-old during the day, her 4-year-old went to preschool and daycare during the day. When asked if she cared for her 11-month-old, she testified, "Yes, most of the time. Sometimes I take her to an elderly lady who watches her if I need to do something important, if she has the time, or if I need to lay down, or if I can't deal with her at that point. Mm-hmm. Then if she's available, she will take care of her." So the testimony with respect to the daily care of her 11-month-old is that most of the time she cared for her, and if she needed help, she sometimes sought the help of a friend of hers who lived in her same town in Evanston with her. So yes, she's a single parent and needs help with the care of her children, but this is a 24-hour job, and she was providing that care, and she did cook for her children.
Well, using the microwave only.
Yes, Your Honor.
The microwave.
But the testimony actually was not that.
That's what I understand. Now, there may have been, perhaps you can correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. but I don't see that as full-fledged cooking. I know we're in this time that we're in, and... So
right.
A lot of people do use the microwave, but...
In her testimony, she did not say that the microwave cooking was due to some inability to stand or an inability for lack of concentration. She just said in the microwave. We submitted in our brief that the characterization of cooking in that circumstance is not unreasonable, where she did provide this care of her children, which included cooking and the daily kind of care. And I'd just like to...
What about the whole laundry thing? 3 days to do the laundry because she has to rest between each rest so frequently.
She did testify that she sometimes took three days to do 3 loads of laundry. That's not explicitly... explicitly referred to in the ALJ's decision, but it goes back to his credibility finding that when you look to the medical evidence and other evidence, after the April 2002 note from Dr. McShane, there's no other medical evidence
concerning...
What about
her psychiatric problems, her anxiety?
Yes, Your Honor. She first sought treatment.
She's afraid to leave the house. That wouldn't affect her taking care of the baby. Right? She's stuck in the house. She's safe in the house. She feels safe in the house. That's where the baby is. Right? So
mm-hmm.
She's afraid to go out of the house. That would certainly affect her ability to work.
Your Honor, the treatment notes actually show that she improved, that her depressive symptoms and symptoms of irritability, of feeling overwhelmed, of being irritable, that these symptoms improved.
I heard she had anxiety also.
She did have anxiety. So she did report anxiety attacks, Your Honor. And the
ALJ didn't discuss that.
The ALJ did remark in his review of the evidence that in May of 2002 she reported having anxiety attacks. This is the only report in the record of her report to a medical source or her treating source of having anxiety attacks. She said she had two in the past month. In her testimony, she testified that she had two in 1 week, but her testimony reflects that these anxiety attacks lasted about a minute. She described them, that her heart raced, but she said they don't last that long. They last about a minute. So her testimony itself does not reflect that she would require a day to recover from these attacks. And so the evidence in the record regarding her anxiety attacks just does not reflect that they would have affected her basic abilities
to work.
Well,
is there any point in the record where the ALJ looks at all these different factors and evaluates? I mean, I know that he like takes each little factor and evaluates them, but in terms of her overall condition, shouldn't he have looked at all of those factors in combination?
With regard to her...
And the anxiety, her mental state, the obesity...
Well, with regard to her mental impairments, I would argue that his reasoning can be tracked throughout his decision. In his review of the evidence, he discusses this about 8 months, 7 to 8 month treatment history that she received for her depressive symptoms. He then notes her depressive symptoms that she showed at the beginning of her treatment. Then he discusses the B criteria, which is used at step 3 in the sequential process. And he talks about her concentration problems, finds moderate deficiency in concentration, persistence, and pace, and then moves on to the credibility determination where he talks more about the aggressive treatment for the mental impairment. So I would argue that the reasoning throughout the case shows his review of the record as a whole, and that also applies to the physical impairments. I see
okay.
I'm out of time.
Thank you, Ms. Werfel. Mr. Schultz, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Just a couple of points. At page 245 of the record, which is the last psychiatric treatment note, Ms. Gentle told the psychiatric nurse that she actually asked if she could have her Prozac increased because she still is having feelings of not wanting to leave the house. So that's in the most recent psychiatric notes. And finally, in terms of the treating Dr. McShane's statement that she should not do heavy lifting, that wasn't a functional capacity report by Dr. McShane. Dr. McShane was writing a letter to a daycare action council in support of Ms. Gentle's being given daycare. So she wasn't asked to provide all of the claimant's limitations. She just gave the one that she thought would be helpful to get the daycare for Ms. Gentle.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Schultz and Ms. Werfel. Next case for argument, United States versus